Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, 2020 Presidential Race Heats Up. As many of you are aware, I'm sure, former Vice President Joe Biden has picked his VP candidate on the Democratic ticket, Senator Kamala Harris. Boo, hiss, yay, whatever you want to do. Am I surprised by this pick? Yes and no. As I stated here months ago, it seems like a lifetime ago, when we had some semblance of normalcy before this pandemic really broke down, before the shutdowns, before the economic collapse, we had the Democrat Party presidential debates. And there was, umpteen hundred people up there on stage. And I said to the audience, as I'm handicapping this, I think Senator Kamala Harris could make a good run at it. Not because I like her, not because I think she's competent, not because I think she has a solid vision or ideology for the future of this country, because she doesn't have an ideology. She does not have a vision for this country. But nonetheless, I stated here many times before that I sensed and see in this woman a very ruthless and power-hungry individual. And as I stated months ago, as far as I'm concerned, in this world and in the world of politics, that can prove to be a very lethal combination. And it can get you places. It might not be enough to get you over the finish line, but you can go far with being ruthless and power hungry, because you don't care. You'll be manipulative. You'll put on a fake smile, a fake laugh, which she clearly does, and you can see right through it. So we're going to see a lot more of that fake smile and that fake laugh as we move forward here. Now, I don't know how the campaign is going to move forward on either side, on the Biden campaign or on the Trump campaign. Are there going to be more in-person events? Is it going to be more virtual? How is this all going to play out? We have the DNC convention, but that's going to be virtual next week. So how is that all going to play out? But getting back, obviously, to Senator Kamala Harris. And I admitted I was wrong once we started to witness this woman's performance on the big stage. She did not handle herself well, net-net. There were a couple decent performances. She got a couple zingers across here and there, but she's supposed to be this shark of an attorney, a shark of a prosecutor. She couldn't defend herself because she's blinded by power. Now, you can say, this is my opinion, and I guess, in all honesty, it is my opinion, but I see it. I do a pretty good job at reading people. I can just see it in this woman's face and in her demeanor, the way she carries herself. She was blinded and remains blinded by power. But nevertheless, even though she didn't get the nod to become the presidential nominee, she came in second place. So not too bad. And I attribute a lot of that to the fact that she is power hungry and that she is ruthless. Now, I don't know, obviously, what took place behind the scenes. Maybe some other potential candidates bowed out. They didn't want to do it. Or really, maybe Joe Biden actually likes this woman and thinks she is a solid choice. I do not think that she is. I don't think she's ready to be the president of the United States if she had to step into that position. Could she handle the responsibilities of the vice presidency? Sure, I'm sure she could. But to actually be the president of the United States, I think she would be completely over her head. As would many other people, as have many other presidents. That's why we talked about this yesterday, the unfunded insanity. This is because one person after the next is in over their heads. Not just in the White House, but in Congress as well. I don't think, again, as I stated at the top of the podcast, that she has an overall vision or ideology for the future of this country. That's not who she is. She didn't handle herself well on the debate stage because she doesn't have a vision. She didn't have a health care plan, which of course is the golden calf of the Democratic Party. She was wishy-washy. And when you're on that stage with individuals such as Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, you better know what you're talking about. You better have a vision, because those two individuals, Crazy Bernie and Pocahontas, they're ideologues. They have a vision for this country. I don't like it, but that's the fact. They have plans for everything. They're ridiculous. They make no sense whatsoever. They will be completely destructive to this country, just putting the pedal to the metal on top of what already is in existence. But at least they have a plan. And I gave them both a lot of credit, because they know how to debate. They know how to get their talking points across, because it's all political theater up there. You only get 2 minutes to answer a question. You have to know how to get a soundbite in. So they both get A's on that, being Bernie and Pocahontas. They defend themselves well. They debate well. They even do a good job at times of identifying a lot of the problems in this country and even root causing them. But when it comes to their solutions, they're off the rails. It's like going into a doctor's office, you got a minor sniffles, you got a little cough going on, a doctor says, okay, here, take some cough medicine, drink plenty of fluid, and if it gets worse, call me back in a few days. These two loony bins, they'd say, well, we got to amputate something. That's how good they are at maybe diagnosing, oh, you got a cough, you got sniffles, but then we got to amputate. That's their solution to the sniffles and to a cough. That's how crazy they are with their proposed policies. They make no sense whatsoever. They are completely unaffordable, completely unsustainable. We talk a lot, obviously, about the national debt here. It was $26,625,000,000,000 per yesterday's podcast. Right now, it is $26,629,000,000,000. That's an increase of $4 billion over one day. Okay, in one 24-hour period. Let's say, for the sake of example, Mark Cuban, because a lot of you are familiar with his name. Shark Tank, owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team, entrepreneur, yada, 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 right? I know in the not-too-distant future, when he was on the Forbes, 500 richest people's list, I think he was somewhere around having that type of net worth of about $4 billion. It really doesn't matter. I'm just throwing out there somebody who is a billionaire. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, he's worth $4 billion. You could tax 100% of his net worth, which has taken him his entire life to accumulate. And all we would have done is funded the government for one 24-hour period. Now, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and many others on the Democratic side would have you believe that all we got to do is tax those individuals a couple percentage points above a certain income level or above a certain net worth level, and their utopian vision of free healthcare, free daycare, free education, free everything under the sun is going to be paid for. You see how simple this is to tear them down? This is basic math. All you got to do is a little research. All you got to do is look under the hood just a little bit. Just a little bit to put these dots together, to paint the picture. So I don't know, at the end of the day, what the platform's really going to be about on the Democrat side, or on the Republican side, for that matter. Of course, they're going to put it out. Of course, they're going to talk about things. I don't want to say that we don't know. They are going to have issues that they're going to discuss. But I still have this race right now handicapped at 50-50. I really do. Earlier in the year, before COVID-19, I thought President Trump would win re-election pretty easily. But given his response to COVID-19, given his response to the protests and to the riots, given the economic fallout of all of this, it really hurts him. It really does. And again, I am not voting for the man. I gave him a shot in 2016. He did a complete 180 on a lot of the issues that I hold dear, that he was talking the talk. He was speaking my language. Did a 180. So I'm done with him. I will continue to give the man credit where credit is due, but he has not earned my vote for a second time. I am not voting for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris either. So I am either not voting or I will vote for the Libertarian candidate. That will be my decision, one of the two. No vote or a vote for the Libertarian candidate. Because I am sick and tired of all of these false promises. I am sick and tired of all of the rhetoric. I'm sick and tired of the Banana Republic printing press that is running full bore. And they're about to shoot that thing with another shot of adrenaline in the not-too-distant future. Make no mistake about it. And the same thing. You have the Democrats claiming all you got to do is tax people a little bit more to pay for all of this. And on the other, you got Thunder Thumbs who says, hey, who gives a damn about deficits and the debt and all this stuff? Just print the money. Just print it. We got to give more money out to the people. We don't have it. The government doesn't have it. Print it. That's the solution. This is our choice in 2020. Two political parties that do not understand mathematics at a basic level, and two parties that do not understand economics at a basic level. So, when you do a podcast like we did yesterday on the unfunded insanity, it makes a lot of sense. Well, these idiots don't understand math, finance, economics. Of course we're going to be in this type of quagmire. They don't know how to do it. And they are continuing to do the same thing. And somehow we're supposed to believe that it's going to produce a different result. That was the insanity part, because that's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Now, what's going to be different this time is how much worse it's going to be when all of the cards fall to the floor. When the inflation picks up. When it turns into stagflation. When it turns into hyperinflation. And again, we might not necessarily witness hyperinflation here in the United States, but inflation does not understand or respect borders. That money is going to flow where it flows. We have the total economic collapses of several countries around the world. These are the weakest links in the chain. These are the same countries that were protesting prior to COVID-19. Do you get it? Do you understand what is going on here? It's just a matter of time until these declines, these economic declines, these economic collapses make their way here to the United States of America as well. Now, will they be as devastating as, say, in Venezuela or Iran or Lebanon or perhaps Turkey or South Africa or many others that are waiting in the wings? Hopefully not. Hopefully not. But there is no question that we are in decline in this country. And what we are doing is solidifying a decade, at least, a decade's worth of very, very slow growth. This is the greatest depression. We sealed our fate with the Nobody Cares Act, with the PPP loans, with the bailouts to the largest corporations on planet Earth, many of which have more money than God. And I do think the Federal Reserve released their monthly update on their term sheet when it comes to where they're putting their money. I'm going to have to find that, and we'll have to go over that later this week because I want to focus mainly on the politics, because that was big news today with the announcement of Kamala Harris. But these people don't understand basic math, basic economics. That's why you have these problems, and they're going to continue, and they're going to get worse. For those of you who may be joining the Capital News podcast for the first time, we did, for lack of a better word, a little mini-series here on the Capitol News to give a history lesson of what took place in 1929 following the major stock market crash, how the government and central bank responded, and how their actions turned what would have been a recession, and most likely a severe recession, into the Great Depression. Unbelievable how similar the policies are. So we cannot expect a much different result. And one of the biggest problems now, too, that we face today as opposed to back then, the demographic picture is horrendous. The debt picture is exponentially worse today than it was then. Competition is global. Because you have to understand, we weren't truly out of the depths of the Great Depression until after World War II. A lot of people would have you believe that it was World War II itself that got us out of the Great Depression. That's simply not true. There was no economic boom during wartime. A lot of production for automobiles was stopped. The steel to make tanks and warplanes and boats and submarines. There was major rationing throughout the country. That is not a recovery. That is not a booming economy. That was creating goods for destructive purposes, war. It was not creating production. It was not production for constructive purposes. We did not come out of the Great Depression, truly, until after World War II. We had huge demographics behind us. We nuked Japan. They're no longer a competitor. Europe laid in ruins. They're no competition. There was no competition from anywhere else. We had the vast majority of the world's gold at that time. Gold is and was money then, still is today. And those with the gold make the rules. We had a number of tailwinds that propelled us and got us out of the Great Depression following the victory in World War II. Today, it's a completely different picture. Completely different picture. We do not have those types of tailwinds. And I hope it doesn't take a war for us to get out of what we are going into, as are many other countries. And God knows there is a bunch of dry tinder and kindling just waiting to explode. And unfortunately, we saw a major explosion in Lebanon. So, buckle up. But I want to know what the Democrats are going to propose. I want to understand from Democrats who believe that healthcare is a right for everybody. I want to understand why they believe that. And I want to understand why they think if it is a right, that government should be 100% in control of it. Basically meaning there should be no private health insurance companies. And I guess even all hospitals should be run by the government. Of course, there's enough administrators to begin with. Because what's their core argument here? That it's a necessity? That it's a right, therefore the government has to provide it? Well, don't we have the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution? I have the right to peacefully assemble. Let's protest. Does that mean if I want to make a big sign, I get to go to a government building and say, hey, write me a check. Here's how much it's going to cost me to make this sign. No, that's ludicrous. I have the right to bear arms. Do I go to a government building and say, hey, I want to buy this nice 1911 style 45 pistol. Give me a check. Here's how much it costs. No, that's not how it works. So I don't understand the rationale. the necessity of it. Well, human beings have a lot of necessities, don't we? We need clothing, we need shelter, we need food. Why isn't the argument from the Democratic Party that the government should be involved in all of those aspects as well? And of course, to some degree, they are. But not in totality. Why not? Why do we have so many grocery stores? Shouldn't there just be one government grocery store? And they can do price controls? And they can just set the price. Everything will just be perfect. Why do we have family farms? Why do we have corporate farms? Shouldn't it be government farms? And they can control the price. And everything will be perfect. You need shelter, don't you? Well, think about all of those trades that go into building a house. Why do we have small, mid-size, and large companies, cement finishers for the foundation, brick and block masons? Why do we have these people? Why do we have private companies? Don't you need a house? Don't houses need a foundation? Why isn't the government involved in that? Why do we have these small businesses? Shouldn't it just be the government that does it and sends out the cement finishers and the block masons to do it? You need a roof over your head. Why do we have small businesses that are in the roofing business? Shouldn't it be a government business? Government operated? How do they draw the line? How do they pick and choose? I want to know. Because it's basically, it's off of necessity. It's a right. What's healthcare? Isn't that secondary to food? If you're starving to death, what good's healthcare? You need food. You need shelter. You need clothing. These people make no sense whatsoever, and I can almost guarantee you the vast majority of people who believe that healthcare is a right and therefore government is supposed to be responsible for providing it have never even asked themselves that line of questioning that I just posed to this audience. Not once. And I don't consider myself anything special, and I don't think that was a difficult thought experiment. Where does it stop? If it's just so much more efficient for the government to do everything, then why do we have business at all? And of course, the ironic thing with this is you'll have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and so many others rail against monopolies. Yet that's exactly what they're trying to create. A government-run monopoly. It's just Medicare for all, baby. That's it. The government's running the show. It's more efficient. There's just one payer. Well, then there should just be one farm. There should just be one grocery store. There should just be one home builder, all run and operated by the government. Because if the logic's good for one, the logic should be good for everything else. The law of economics does not cease to exist for the medical field, for health insurance. I can assure you, the laws of economics apply to those fields, just as they do to everything else. And just like when the government gets its fat, stubby, greasy fingers on something, it ruins it. And healthcare and health insurance are no exception. So I would like an answer to those questions. How do you draw the line? How do you determine what is a necessity? Why is it if it's a right when it comes to healthcare, that means government has to provide it, has to pay for it? But if I want to protest, I got to build my own sign. I got to pay a sign company out of my own pocket. If I have the right to bear arms, I got to go buy my own guns. Why doesn't the government fund it? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can go down the list. These are simple questions, and you're not going to get answers from these people because they just want the utopia. They're blinded by their utopian vision. They're siloed in, and that's it. Now we have it. We know who the VP pick is. This race is heating up. The debates are going to be a national disgrace. They're going to be an embarrassment. There's basically no doubt about it, in my opinion. I mean, maybe there's a 0.001% chance that you might actually get something of substance from Donald Trump and Joe Biden, but I highly doubt it. It's basically entertainment is how you're going to have to look at it. But it's going to be a national embarrassment. And again, if you look at previous debates, those were embarrassments too. But now this is just, you know, two angry men going at it. Two angry old guys going at it. And that's what it's going to be. Now, obviously, Kamala Harris is going to have to up her game as far as I'm concerned. Now there should be one debate between her and Vice President Mike Pence. If I recall correctly, Mike Pence did a pretty good job debating Tim Kaine back in 2016. So Mike Pence can hold his own. He's a good wingman for Donald Trump. So it is going to be interesting how Kamala Harris is going to sort of resurrect herself, if she can get back on top of the argument and persuade people that she is competent and ready for the Oval Office if need be. She's never going to persuade me of that because she isn't. But she's going to have to do a job in trying to sell herself for that purpose, because a lot of people are going to think that Joe Biden is only going to be able to serve one term, or God forbid something happens, then she's going to have to step in. Now, how heavy is that going to weigh on people's mind at the end of the day? I don't think it's going to be enough to sway the election, but there's definitely going to be people who put a lot of weight on that. But it's really the two guys at the top of the ticket. It's not people really looking at Mike Pence, and it's not really people looking at Kamala Harris. It's Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. Now, I've stated this a number of times, and I fall into this category because I voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and I will not vote for him this time. I won't. How many people are in that ballpark with me? How many people in states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan, the blue wall, if you will? How many of those people who said, you know what, I don't want the status quo, I don't want Hillary Clinton, maybe Donald Trump can do it. Maybe he can do it. How many people are going to say, well, he needs another 4 years? Is it going to be enough to get him over the finish line? Perhaps, but I don't think so. Now, that's at least when it comes to the popular vote. I think it's pretty clear that the president is not going to win the popular vote. He could, but I don't think so. I mean, it is 2020. A few months until Election Day is an eternity. There's a lot of things that could happen between now and then, so I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch. But let's just be reasonable. It's probably unlikely that Donald Trump will win the popular vote. Now, he may very well win again with the Electoral College, which is what happened in 2016. Now, if that should be the case, buckle up for 3 to 6 months worth of protests and violent riots. Okay? Buckle up. Now, if he wins the popular vote and the Electoral College, I think there's still going to be some violence, some protests that take place, but I don't think it will be as long-lived if the president actually wins both the popular vote and the Electoral College, which, of course, he has to win the Electoral College to become the president again. So that poses another question that I want to throw out there to the audience that I want you to think about, because this is a possibility. Maybe not necessarily in 2020, although it could be, but it most definitely could be a possibility in 2022. Would you rather have a President Donald Trump with a Congress that is controlled by Democrats, both houses of Congress, controlled by Democrats, or would you rather have a President Joe Biden with both houses of Congress controlled by the Republicans? To me, I think that's an interesting question, because Those are possibilities. So who would you rather have? Think about the impeachment that already took place. If the Democrats were in control of both houses and the president remains the president, they got enough not only to impeach him, but to remove him. Can the country take that type of beating again? And I think it isn't. Even if he does something that is impeachable. The country, again, is in decline. That's just going to be the cherry on top of the cake. Now, would the Republicans go after Joe Biden? Probably. Would it be to the same extent as the Democrats? Probably not. But I can tell you this. If you had Joe Biden as president and you had the Republicans in control of both houses of Congress, they would miraculously grow a spine again and start saying no to things. No more spending. No more big debts and deficits. They would miraculously find their spine. Now, of course, with their guy in the White House, they have no spine. They have no conviction. They have no principles. We witness this on a daily basis. You just have to pay attention. You just have to get your head out of your you-know-what and understand what's going on here. Do not get siloed in. Do not tolerate these actions because it's your guy. That's why we're in this mess. Because the pendulum swings every 4-8 years. It's just a release valve. That's all it is. They tell you what you want to hear. They get in there and boom, $1 trillion deficits, $4 trillion deficit this year, which means we spent $7 trillion. $7 trillion. Just this year alone. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And more is coming down the pike. Make no mistake about it. You know, a lot of questions were posed, which I like to do, obviously, here from time to time. What's the Democratic platform? How do they determine what's a right? Who makes the determination how it's paid for? Why the government has to run it? What's a necessity? How do they draw the line? I'm just curious to know. Have you asked your Democratic friends these questions? Have they ever brought them up to you in conversation? Let me know. Because I haven't come across it. It's just this utopian vision. All you got to do is tax some billionaires and everything's going to be paid for. No. Can Kamala Harris resurrect herself? Can she give herself? Can she rise from the ashes, if you will? We'll see. But again, it's really between the top dogs at the top of the ticket. And it will get interesting, and it will be entertaining to some degree, but it's also going to be embarrassing. But that's where we are. And then think hard about that question I posed. What would you rather have? I think it's interesting. I'd like to hear your comments. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.